It's The Planet Today, where we cover the latest in climate change, wildlife conservation, renewable energy, and environmental policy. I'm Matt Norden. This is Nick Janusa, and it is Friday, March 15th. Nick, do you want to talk about tomorrow or Saturday first? Wait, tomorrow is Saturday. Do you want to talk about tomorrow or Sunday first?
I'd like to fix some housekeeping stuff. No, I'm just kidding. Happy birthday to my girlfriend. Tomorrow is her birthday. I love you. Happy birthday. We're going to have a great time this weekend. Let's ride.
All right. And then I will use my allotted time to say Sunday, happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Pretty wild that like your birthdays are on back-to-back days.
It is. It really is crazy. Every time someone asks us about it, we're like, because we're both, all right, so we're both Pisces. So we're like, yeah, you know what? It is kind of nice to not have like the attention all on you for a birthday. Mm. So we both get to kind of split that a little bit. Pisces don't like all the attention being on them. In my experience, that's at least my experience. But anyway, yeah, so we kind of like that we get to share it, and it's cool. It's like one big party instead of it just being like, hey, it's your birthday. And then, you know, 6 months later, hey, it's your birthday.
And also, like, not for nothing, no disrespect to people out there who look forward to this every year, but the absolute worst part of my birthday every year is people singing happy birthday to me. Like, there's nothing like it. That just makes me want to wish I wasn't born ever. So to have someone to kind of be like, we're in this together, this miserable experience. And you know what? It's not just me in the trenches being sung happy birthday to. I got you by my side.
Exactly. Dude, I remember actually last year I sung happy birthday to you at Pat's apartment. We all sung happy birthday, I should say. And it was a chocolate cake. And I have this video on my phone. And it's just you being like, oh God, like this is awful. Like you can just see it in your eyes. Like you're smiling, but it's the most lifeless smile I've ever seen in my whole life. But you can just tell you're like, get this over with now.
It's like, I appreciate my friends, but man, that's always the hardest part of a birthday. Well, anyway, I hope you have a wonderful birthday.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I hope both of you have a wonderful birthday. This is about the pod, but this is about the pod family. So I hope both of you have a wonderful birthday. I will be sure to reach out to you both, not just today while we're recording, but on your actual birthdays.
Well, we appreciate that. And thank you so much. Appreciate it.
We appreciate you. If you're listening, go wish Nick a happy birthday wherever you can. Actually, leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you're listening right now and say, happy birthday, Nick. That's what we want.
I'll take it. That sounds just as good.
All right, let's get into the show.
Time for our quick hits for the week. And the first one is by Melina Walling of the Associated Press, who writes, maple syrup season came weeks early in the Midwest. Producers are doing their best to adapt.
Maple syrup season is occurring earlier in the Midwest as a result of the warmest winter on record and earlier springs happening year after year. Maple syrup producers can be, as the article points out, indigenous peoples serving their community, family-run operations who have been doing this for years and for generations, or for producers who want to leave a legacy of land use behind. The thing that ties all of those groups together and other maple syrup producers is that they are deeply tied to their land and they just care about the land because it's giving them a livelihood and it's giving them so much. And the best thing that you can do to support that thing that is giving you so much is to nurture it, is to care for it, is to be a steward of that land. Because people care, this could be a driving force in preserving maple trees and making sure that they remain resilient to climate change.
Every spring, maple trees go from lying dormant all winter to using the sugar in their sap as a way to not freeze at night. Humans have been collecting the sap and condensing it to make maple syrup for hundreds of years. The article points out that if you tap the trees too soon, the holes will close up instead of continuing to produce sap. If you wait too long, you've missed out on some prime syrup production. So with spring arriving earlier, producers need to be on top of their schedules and tap trees at the right time.
Drier summers is another challenge that maple trees and maple syrup producers are grappling, but this all basically comes down to maple trees being another thing that climate change has its hands in. And it'll be up to those who, like I mentioned earlier, are caring for those maple trees to adapt and to ensure that the trees continue to thrive if they want to continue to produce maple syrup as a commodity. Personally, I love maple syrup, and I know that we could talk about the climate impacts of this, but I want to start off on a fun note. I love waffles. I love pancakes. I would be devastated if the maple syrup industry, you know, isn't able to continue to produce it, or worse, you know, all we're left with is the fake syrup that just isn't the same unless you're at like a really low end diner, in which case, like, yeah, it kind of hits. Cause like, I'm not getting high end maple syrup at a low end, like Waffle House.
Right. You don't expect it. Yeah. You don't expect like high tier syrup coming from like your diner or something like that. You're expecting the absolute trash of the trash, but it's still going to be hit so hard and be so beautiful.
Oh, it's the best in the right scenario, but I don't want that all the time. Right. Like, when I'm home, I want that grade A maple syrup.
See, I'm somewhere in between because it's so damn expensive. And I'm like, I can't justify like $18 for like a real nice high grade maple syrup. Not to say that there's not a place for it, because when you want it and you have it, there's nothing better. All this to say, FMK, pancakes, French toast, waffles. Go.
And for our British listeners out there, snog, marry, pie. I am going to say, actually, you know what? I'm leaning into the whole Love Island fandom that I absolutely adore. I'm going to marry pancakes, because like the worst pancake you've ever had is still like a 9 out of 10. It's just consistent. It's delicious. Okay. It's light, fluffy. It's perfect. I'm going to snog waffles because like nice. They could be sexy, they could be fun, or
yep,
they could be kind of bad. You know, if you overcook it, they're more likely, I feel like you're more likely to burn a waffle than a pancake, and then they get like super crispy because hard. They're thinner. Yeah.
Yep.
And that leaves pie, French toast. I do like French toast. But you know what? Unless you're getting like a really good stellar brioche loaf to make the French toast.
Yes.
French toast is kind of average with average bread. It really it's about the bread. It's not about the food itself.
Right. It's like challah bread, or like you said, brioche. Those are the two that are massive difference makers for French toast. I will just say really quick, snog pancakes, marry waffles, because nothing hits as good as a really nice Belgian style waffle.
Yeah.
It's slightly crispy, but it's just pillowy soft too. Oh my gosh.
And airy.
I literally want one right now. I might make one later. and then definitely kill French toast, because like you said, it's so hit and miss. Sometimes you get the like the white bread French toast that is just like at IHOP. I feel like they probably have that.
Yeah.
It's cut in triangles. I couldn't be less interested. I could not be more like less interested in that. That is the worst French toast I've ever seen. I don't want it. I just leave it miles away from me. I don't want to see it.
Yeah. You know, there goes our sponsorship. Our next story was about to be presented by IHOP, but I think they're going to pull out of that. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, no, on that note, though, let's get into that next story, which, because it is Nick's birthday this weekend, we want to have less editing to do this week. So we're going to jump right into this week's environmental policy roundup. We will spend a little bit more time on each of these. So, you know, as always, they're in your show notes for more detail, but we're going to do a little bit more than we do normally, where it's just headline, move on. Water rights for the Colorado River are once again at the forefront of U.S. environmental policy, with the upper basin and lower basin states arguing over future rights and a deadline next week to come to a resolution. The current guidelines for sharing the river don't expire until 2026, and the Biden administration set a mid-March deadline for proposals for the new guidelines. The talking points here are going to be that reservoirs are drying up, upper basin states are losing snowpack, therefore snow melt from climate change, and the lower basin states are running out of groundwater.
Ocean temperatures hit a record high in February by reaching 69.91 degrees Fahrenheit or 21.06 degrees Celsius, which beats the previous record of 69.77 or 20.98 degrees Celsius from August of 2023. Last month was also the hottest February on record, which the authors write marks 9 months in a row that we've had the warmest month on record for that specific month. Marine scientists express concerns that a fourth mass coral bleaching event for the world's oceans is likely happening in the Southern Hemisphere because of this, and it could be the worst mass bleaching event in history.
President Biden and his EPA are delaying a regulation to reduce emissions from gas power plants, and his administration is set to weaken new pollution standards for vehicles, which will slow the transition to EVs. President Biden's likely doing this in hope that moderates will support his reelection, but this is likely going to come at the cost of losing more support from younger, progressive voters. I'm going to say something that really expresses how dumb I am sometimes, and then we'll move on to more important things. My first thought, because like I've lived in the Northern Hemisphere my entire life, I've only ever been to the Northern Hemisphere, would love to go to a bunch of places in the Southern Hemisphere at some point, but like my worldview is shaped by where I have been. And I was like, how on earth is February the hottest month for ocean temperatures ever when it's winter? And then I realized the entire Southern Hemisphere, like, this is their August. This is their peak summer.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just like, every once in a while, I'm just reminded, like, I'm not as smart as I think I am. And I don't think anybody is.
Yeah, the world doesn't revolve around North America. No, I honestly, I'm guilty of the same thing all the time. So I completely understand.
So moving on to what I consider a little bit more important, and you know, just a fair warning here in advance, with election season coming up, I feel like we're probably going to spend a little bit more time talking about the U.S. election and how this relates to environmental policy. So what I will say here is I get it, but I'm disappointed, which has kind of been like a theme, I feel like, for Biden's presidency when it comes to environmental policy for us. Support in the polls is not as high as an incumbent president would expect, not as high as an incumbent president would like. So, you know, the best way that his administration feels to shore up those polling data is focus on swing state voters, focus on moderates,
yep,
and hope that younger progressives are going to be like, well, I'm really disappointed in him, but it beats the alternative. And, you know, that's a strategy.
Yeah,
I get it. I can't say I love it because I don't. As one of those like younger progressive voters, it really sucks that a lot of times, like, I felt like it's just, we're going to do this about climate change. And then they don't do that. And instead they just open up like offshore drilling in certain places. So,
yeah,
you know, like I'm not going to like pretend President Biden hasn't done a lot of good things for the environment, because like his environmental record is good. If he was to follow all of his promises and do what he said he was going to do, it would have been great. And he just, you know, has continuously, I don't want to say let me down, but like kept one foot in the bedroom and one foot out the door when it comes to the oil and gas industry.
Lovely metaphor. Love that one. Agreed completely. I think it's the classic, like, we can't have a Trump presidency again. And he will do whatever it takes to get elected.
Yeah.
And if that means doing this, like, you know, delaying that regulation, he's going to do it. And I think this is probably, this is just the tip of the iceberg, basically. I think there's probably more coming that will lean into him being reelected.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, him leaning on his what his actual thoughts are and what he actually wants to get accomplished. Again, though, it's just a politician talking. You know, and like at the end of the day, that's all it is. And like a politician will say and do whatever it takes to be elected.
Yeah. And I think, you know, something worth noting is like all presidents in the history of presidents have been more moderate during their first term than their second term, because like you are looking for reelection and you are pretty much campaigning as soon as you have like what, a year to you have a year to be president, and then it's the midterms,
right?
And then all of a sudden it's 2 years until you're up for re-election. So I get it, it sucks. My hope is that like get moderates on board to vote this November and then lean into way more progressive policies, because like we can't keep doing this, in my opinion. This is an opinion show.
Like you always say, you can't keep kicking the can down the road, because it's eventually going to, you know, come back to bite you.
All right. If you liked my one foot in the bedroom, one foot out the door analogy metaphor, that was Pete Wentz, songwriter for Fall Out Boy, from their song Hum Hallelujah from infinity on high.
Only you would have that in your back pocket ready to use.
I have never left the mid-2000s pop punk scene. We are about to leave the first half of the show, though, and we will be back with two more stories for you in a few minutes. Stay tuned. Today's episode of The Planet Today is brought to you by Valo Alta. Valo Alta's everyday handkerchief is a high-performance, daily-use handkerchief designed to help minimize your impact. Made in the United States from sustainably sourced Irish linen, capturing the material's historic craftsmanship and natural antimicrobial properties, handkerchiefs perfectly balance softness with durability and absorbency with rapid drying. Ideal for functional use in all settings, from the outdoors to routine encounters, their small and lightweight design makes one a must-carry for wherever life takes you. Build your own bundles from limited edition colors at valoalta.co/TPT for 15% off. That's valoalta.co/TPT.
Welcome back to The Planet Today, folks. Next up, world's earliest fossilized forest discovered in Minehead, Somerset, by BBC's Greg Brosnan.
Off the coast of southwest England, scientists have discovered what is thought to be the earliest known fossilized forest.
Researchers from Cambridge and Cardiff universities say that these are the oldest fossilized trees ever found in Britain and the oldest forest known on the planet. Between 419 and 358 million years old. The trees measured between 6.5 to 13 feet in height and had root systems potentially serving as the ancestors of today's trees, such as the Dicksonia antarctica, which lives in Australia and Asia. The forest also shows how trees can help shape a landscape and stabilize riverbanks and coastlines, writes Brosnan. The previous record holder for oldest fossilized forest is in New York and is about 4 million years younger than the one just discovered.
Super cool story for me. I mean, like, look, anytime that you can find something this old for the first time, so exciting to me. And like, I just have this sense of wonder when it comes to things like this, because it's amazing how in 2024, we're still just finding things. And for something like this, where it's now 4 million years older than the previous record holder, like, that's a tremendous amount of time. And it's just, it's nuts to me. It's always nuts to me when we find stuff like this.
It is crazy. And like, it just, you know how they always say, like, oh, we only know, like, whatever it is. I don't know what the percentage is, but like 30% of the oceans.
Yeah.
Like, what? How do we not know this stuff by now? Like, I know we just had, like, we're in the internet age. We just figured out technology, like, maybe 30 years ago, 20 years ago. So, like, I'm not saying that we're not, you know, far enough along, but wow.
Yeah.
Like, we're still finding, like, forests. How?
Yeah. And especially something like this where it's fossilized. Like, I wonder how many people have been past this and just been like, that's a cool rock formation. Just kept walking before somebody was like, let's carbon date this and figure out, like, what this is.
Yeah.
Another just quick fun fact before we move on. The researchers said that this was found closer to Germany and Belgium than Britain. But, you know, obviously landscapes change over 400 million years since this forest was an actual thriving forest.
Right.
So, again, like, just crazy how much tectonic plates have shifted and how this is now an ocean away. Or, you know,
yeah,
not actually an ocean away, but on the other side of Europe.
Pangea, bro.
Big Pangea, guys.
Big Pangea guy. All right, our last quick hit of the week is from the New York Times, where Katrin Einhorn writes, how to move a 1,000-pound rescued manatee. Swimming is not an option.
Ooh, love the way you read that. So, really neat story about rehabilitation for animals that weigh half a ton. In 2021, Zoo Tampa's Manatee Hospital took in three baby orphaned female manatees named Calliope, Salil, and Piccolina. Normally, manatees stay with their mothers for up to 2 years, but no one knew what happened to these sweet babies' mother. One of them was found with their umbilical cord still attached. So clearly something had happened where they lost their mom. Luckily, Zoo Tampa brought them in. And what does that look like for a zookeeper, for the veterinarian staff? Every 4 hours, they had to bottle feed them. Staff members took turns working the night shift as they rehabilitated these baby manatees and got them ready for eventual re-release into the wild. Now, in order to do that, manatees need to get up to 600 pounds. Piccolina was the smallest one that they brought in, and she was 44 pounds, which is 21 pounds lighter than the average baby manatee. So they were small. They were young, just beautiful little sea cows. Fast forward to November 2022, weighing between 375 and 475 pounds respectively, they were sent to the Cincinnati Zoo to finish their bulk season so that Zoo Tampa could take in more orphaned manatees closer to the source. Why Cincinnati? It's one of three zoos that can take in manatees that need to grow and one of 20 plus agencies and organizations that work on manatee rehabilitation. So very selective group here of zoos and other organizations that can actually contribute to this. So once they got to Cincinnati, they were fed romaine, endive, kale, escarole, lettuce, Napa cabbage, and bok choy, like beautiful salad right there, arranged at the bottom of their tanks. That way it would kind of imitate seagrass and get them ready for when they got into the wild. So we're now fast forwarding again, fall 2023. They were double their weight from a year prior and ready to fly back to Florida after being marked with their initial on a tarp that was put over each manatee, got them lifted, placed into a padded crate, and set to travel. Shipping company DHL helps with flights for manatees, in part because their headquarters is close to the Cincinnati and Columbus zoos, both of which work in manatee rehabilitation. People have said during this whole process, manatees just stay pretty chill and relaxed, although we can't tell for sure if they're stressed or not. But the fact that they weren't really showing any signs of anything going on just kind of proves how chill these animals are. Once back home in Florida, they were given one last medical check by the Zoo Tampa staff before being released into the waters that they call home. So before we talk about manatees more broadly, Nick, give me your thoughts on the story.
It's just unbelievable. Like it's crazy. And this story kind of gives you an idea as to how much work really goes into like wildlife conservation and like preparing babies to be raised at, like to raise them yourself basically and put them back into the wild is so much work and so much like logistics that you could never like account for.
Yeah.
And just to think that they were eating like just like greens and getting that thick is unbelievable. Like, it's so cool.
Yeah, they're just... like, everything you just said, I agree with wholeheartedly. Like, it takes so much work behind the scenes to rehabilitate animals for re-release. And, like, I got a good feel for that when I was working at the Bronx Zoo for 2 summers because we worked in animal rehabilitation. Like, I know the two eagles that lived there when I was working there, one of them was hit by a car and the other one flew into a building. Neither of them could fly anymore. Like they weren't going to be able to hunt. And instead of, you know, being euthanized or being left in the wild where they wouldn't survive, they've lived a long time at the Bronx Zoo where there's these ambassador species that, you know, people walk by and they're very chatty and they're cool animals. So I think a lot of the good zoos that are accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, they do awesome work. And like, this is another one of those stories where it like, just like makes you proud that there are people out there willing to bottle feed manatees every 4 hours because they care that much.
Seriously. And who probably have like kids of their own too, that they have to go home and feed too. Like I give them all the credit in the world. It's insane. Like that's a lot of work. So I give them credit.
Yeah. So more about manatees before we close this one out. Manatees were one of the first animals to be protected under the Endangered Species Act of 1973 and have since seen their population rise from 1,000 individuals to 10,000 some 50 years later. Their recovery has gone so well that manatees were changed from endangered to threatened in 2017, which still qualifies them for federal protections. Along with the challenges the species faced in 1973, including propeller boat strikes, manatees are now threatened by climate change, algal blooms, and warming sea temperatures that impact the seagrass that they eat.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that it's easy to go from eating kale, escarole, endive, and bok choy to just going back to your seagrass. That's got to be a hard transition.
I mean, hey, they like it. It's what they eat normally, so.
True. I'm just thinking, like, I'm thinking about, like, a kid who grew up in, like, you know, a household who had just great food. Like, his mom was a great cook growing up. And then he moves out, goes to college, and he's like, this is awful. This is like, I can't eat
dining hall food.
I can't eat in the dining hall another day. That kid was me, by the way.
And hey, look at us now. We both know how to cook and we're damn good at it.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to be self-sufficient in life. Kids, if you're a kid in college, start cooking now. Just trust me. Just do it.
Absolutely agree. That's going to be it for this week's episode of TPT. We will be back next Friday with my interview with Wendy Baker of DynaPower. Until then, go give the show a 5-star rating and review wherever you can and follow our socials at Planet Today Pod. While you're leaving that review, all you got to write, happy birthday, Nick. 3 words. That's all it is. Nick produces our show, makes all the music you hear throughout it. Nick, where can people bump your tunes as a birthday present? Get those streaming numbers up.
You can listen to my stuff at soundcloud.com/BudlinCape. That is BUDLYNCAPE. Go check me out, y'all. And thank you very much.
Our logo is made by Kaylee Veets. Have a great weekend, everyone. And we'll catch you right here next Friday.
Peace.